Welcome to Hacker News Daily, a Bree podcast. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Here's what's making waves today.
AWS hits a $1.7 billion estimated billing hiccup. The FAA restores Boeing's authority to self-certify airworthiness on the 737 MAX and 787. And for the first time, an atmosphere has been detected on an Earth-like planet in the habitable zone of a distant star.
Plus, we're looking at the state of open-source AI, what the Pelican benchmark still teaches us with Kimi K3, and Zilog's Z80 turns 50. Let's get into it.
Let's start with a billing situation at AWS that has some users checking their accounts and doing a double take. A user posting on Hacker News as npreteam reports receiving an estimated monthly bill of $1.7 billion, and their normal usage typically runs under $5.
That is not a typo. They've opened an urgent support ticket with AWS and are pointing to growing discussion on Reddit, asking if others are encountering similar figures.
And they are not alone. Another user, Mistole PM, writes that an AWS budgets alert triggered on a $5 threshold, and the forecasted spend came through at roughly $3 billion. The account has seen no active use within the last year, but the forecast sits at $3,005,575,870.47.
Right down to the cents. When contacted, the AWS support AI chatbot indicated that what it called perfectly consistent daily costs since July 1 strongly point to a billing or metering error, and it stated it had created a support ticket.
The user responded by disabling all IAM roles and deleting known resources. A pretty understandable reaction, though they remain concerned about the possibility of owing Amazon $3 billion.
The core issue appears to be inaccurate estimated billing data on AWS's side. These are forecasts, not final charges, but seeing a billion-plus dollar estimate when your bill is normally under $5 is the kind of thing that makes you want to nuke every resource from orbit.
Yeah, and the fact that multiple users are reporting similar, wildly inflated forecasts suggests this is a broader metering glitch, not an isolated account problem. For now, affected users are waiting on those support tickets.
Shifting to aviation. The FAA has restored Boeing's authority to issue its own airworthiness certificates for newly produced 737 MAX and 787 Dreamliner aircraft, according to a report from CNBC.
This is a meaningful regulatory step. The FAA had previously required its own inspectors to sign off on those certificates after a series of manufacturing quality lapses and the mid-air blowout on a 737 MAX 9 inches early 2024.
Under the restored delegation, authorized Boeing employees acting on behalf of the FAA will once again approve individual aircraft as safe for flight before delivery to airline customers.
So what changes is who signs the paperwork? Boeing personnel rather than FAA inspectors directly. But CNBC notes the FAA will continue heightened oversight of Boeing's factories and will maintain additional inspectors on site.
Right. It's not a return to the pre-crisis status quo. The article characterizes this as part of an ongoing regulatory recalibration tied to Boeing's production stability and compliance commitments. It's a formal step in Boeing's effort to demonstrate its production quality systems meet federal standards.
And the fact that the FAA is keeping extra inspectors in the factories signals that the agency isn't fully stepping back. It's more of a calibrated shift in who performs the final sign-off on each individual aircraft before delivery.
Now to a story that feels like it belongs in a science film. Scientists using the James Webb Space Telescope have detected an atmosphere around LHS 1140b, a rocky, Earth-like planet orbiting in the habitable zone of its star, about 48 light-years away in the constellation Cetus.
This is the first confirmed atmosphere on a temperate rocky exoplanet in the habitable zone. The findings come from a team including researchers from the University of Montreal and were published in the astrophysical journal Letters.
Let's get the numbers. LHS-1140b is roughly 1.7 times the size of Earth and 5.6 times its mass. Observations indicate the atmosphere is nitrogen-rich, resembling our own atmosphere's composition.
And the spectroscopic data suggests the surface temperature may be moderate enough to support liquid water. The planet may also be a water world encased in ice, potentially with a liquid ocean about 4,000 kilometers in diameter on its day side. It's tidally locked, so one side always faces the star.
A big factor here is the host star. LHS-1140 is a quiet red dwarf that emits fewer flares than similar stars. That improves the chance that the atmosphere has survived for billions of years rather than being stripped away by stellar activity.
That combination, size, mass, orbit, and atmospheric retention, places LHS-1140b among the most promising candidates yet found for future habitability studies and atmospheric characterization with existing telescopes, including JWST's ongoing observation cycle.
We're not saying there's life there, but the checklist of conditions that could support it is getting shorter. A nitrogen-rich atmosphere around a rocky world in the habitable zone, that's a first. And it's the kind of milestone that will guide where telescopes point next.
We close with a look at where open-source AI is making inroads, and the picture is strikingly global. Mozilla has published version 1.0 of a report titled The State of Open-Source AI, dated July 2026, and introduced by CTO Rafi Krikorian. It's framed as a recurring addition.
The examples span continents. A Maori broadcaster in New Zealand is training speech models for the Te Reo language under a license that keeps the data with its people. The model serves the community on the community's terms.
Meanwhile, PwC has fine-tuned an open model on the language of finance and runs it for hundreds of clients on its own hardware. No per-token meter. And researchers in Lausanne built an open medical model with the Red Cross, tuned to humanitarian guidelines. They're preparing clinical trials in Switzerland and Tanzania.
And in East Africa, farmers are diagnosing cassava disease using a model that runs offline on the phone itself, in fields beyond cloud reach. There's also a public consortium in Switzerland that trained a national model on public supercomputers.
Taken together, these aren't just experiments. They show open-source AI operating in finance, healthcare, agriculture, language preservation, and public infrastructure, often in settings where a cloud connection or a per-token bill simply isn't viable. Okay, so we are marking an anniversary today. Tomorrow is 15 years since the very first day of the Recurse Center, the self-directed programming retreat.
And the story of how it got started, it is not a straight line at all.
No, it really is not. The founder, Nicholas JBS, along with his co-founders, they had just come out of the summer 2010 Y Combinator batch, and their original idea was, get this, an OKCupid for jobs.
An OKCupid for jobs. Yeah, that fizzled pretty quickly.
It did. And then they spent the better part of a year pivoting through other concepts. None of them worked either.
Right. So after all that, they decided to build something they actually wanted for themselves. A space where programmers could work on fun projects, contribute to open source, and just help each other get better.
They ran two small private batches first. Then they launched publicly on Hacker News. And the reception was incredible.
That Hacker News post brought in the majority of participants for the next several batches, and it reached programmers well beyond the founders' own personal networks. Many of those early people became long-term friends.
And here is the thing. Hacker News has remained the center's number two source of applicants ever since, second only to word of mouth.
There is also this nice detail in the piece. PG. Paul Graham left a comment when they launched, and the author notes that, looking back, his comment turned out to be prescient.
Yeah, a small note that basically saw where this thing was going before anyone else did.
Staying in the AI world. Chinese AI lab Moonshot AI has announced a new model called Kimi K3.
This one is big. 2.8 trillion parameters. They are calling it their most capable model to date, and also the first open 3 trillion parameter class model.
And that matters because the previous crown holder in the open space was DeepSeek's V4 Pro at 1.6 trillion parameters. So K3 is nearly, well, it is a lot bigger.
It is available right now through their website and API. And they have promised an open weight release by July 27, 2026.
Now, on self-reported benchmarks, K3 mostly beats Claude Opus 4.8 Max and GPT-5.5 High.
But it loses to Claude Fable 5 and GPT-5.6 Sol. So it sits in this interesting spot, above some frontier models, below the absolute top.
Simon Willison covered this, and he highlighted something I think is worth paying attention to. What we can still learn from the Pelican benchmark.
Right. The Pelican benchmark. It is one of those evaluation frameworks that tests capabilities the main benchmarks might miss. Willison's point is that even with these enormous parameter counts, the Pelican results tell us something useful about where the model actually stands. Let's shift to a story getting a lot of discussion on Hacker News. A piece from Local News Matters, published July 15, 2026, covers frontline Kaiser nurses and their experience with AI tools and workplace surveillance.
And what the nurses are reporting is not the productivity story you usually hear. They say these systems are degrading both their working conditions and the quality of patient care.
The article details testimony about monitoring technology and AI-driven scheduling, or task allocation, creating new burdens instead of alleviating them.
So the promise of these tools is that they reduce administrative overhead and let nurses focus on patients. But the nurses are saying the opposite is happening.
Right. The surveillance specifically, they say it makes their jobs harder. And the direct quote from the coverage is that it makes patient care worse.
There is a real tension here. These systems are being deployed in high-stakes environments, and the frontline workers, the people who know the workflow best, are raising alarms.
And this is not an abstract critique. These are practicing nurses saying the technology as implemented is actively hurting their ability to do their jobs. All right. We are going to close out with a bit of computing history. The Xilinx Z80 processor has turned 50.
50 years. Officially launched in July 1976. And this 8-bit chip, it went everywhere.
It really did. Early personal computers, home and hobby machines, embedded industrial applications, the Z80 was in all of it.
And one of the key things about the Z80 is that it is binary compatible with the Intel 8080 and 8085. So together, those three chips helped create a de facto hardware standard for 8-bit micros.
Which in turn enabled a de facto software standard built on CP/M and Microsoft BASIC. The hardware standardization made the software ecosystem possible.
Right. And that ecosystem was huge. The Z80 design also spawned many clones and derivatives over the years, which kept that architecture alive well past what anyone expected.
And here we are, 5 decades later, still talking about it. That is a pretty good run for an 8-bit processor. Short sellers have booked an $8.7 billion paper profit as SpaceX private market shares declined to match the company's IPO price. That's according to a Reuters report citing data from Ortex.
Paper profit, meaning these are unrealized gains still sitting on the table. The shares haven't been cashed out yet, but the math has swung sharply in the short seller's favor.
Right. And that swing tracks with the private market shares falling to exactly the level where SpaceX originally went public. So the position that bet against the stock has paid off, at least on paper.
$8.7 billion is a massive number. It tells you this wasn't a fringe trade. A lot of capital lined up on the short side, and the private market repricing validated that call.
And it's worth noting, this is private market trading we're talking about, not the kind of liquid public exchange where you can exit a position in seconds. So those paper profits are one thing. Actually realizing them is another.
Shifting to a different kind of move. Apple has sent legal letters to dozens of OpenAI employees, according to a Financial Times report.
Dozens of employees. That's not a casual inquiry or a single letter to one former engineer. This is a broad, coordinated legal outreach targeting a significant number of people inside OpenAI.
The Financial Times report doesn't detail the exact claims in those letters, but the scale alone suggests this is a serious talent or intellectual property dispute. Apple doesn't send legal letters to dozens of people at another company lightly.
And timing matters here. Apple has been publicly building out its own AI capabilities, while OpenAI has been on a hiring and partnership tear. These letters land right in the middle of that competitive landscape.
We don't yet know whether the letters are about non-compete enforcement, trade secrets, or something else. But the fact that it's Apple, a company famous for secrecy, reaching into OpenAI's workforce is the headline in itself.
Over in the developer world, Julia Evans, the prolific blogger known for making technical topics approachable, wrote about her experience using SQLite as the database for a Django website.
She's actually used SQLite on 4 different websites now. But she says this 4th one is harder, and the reason is interesting. It's because Django's ORM lets the database do more work than her earlier non-Django projects did.
And that pushed her into a realization she spells out pretty candidly. She says she didn't fully appreciate that SQLite is still a database, databases are complicated, and she doesn't know a lot about operating databases.
That's the tension, right? A lot of posts out there say SQLite is fine in production for small sites, and she acknowledges that's true. But fine doesn't mean simple. The database itself doesn't get less complex just because it runs in a single file.
Exactly. The Django OOM abstracts away a lot, but it also hands more responsibility to the database layer: query planning, indexing strategy, concurrency handling. Those are real operational concerns, even with SQLite.
So her post is less a verdict on SQLite and more a reflection on the gap between reading that something is production ready and actually running it when the ORM is punching above your weight.
Finally, a story that sits at the intersection of AI and cryptography. A blog post from the ZK-SEC Quarterly Group details how their AI auditor, called ZCO, discovered a critical soundness bug in OpenVM's guest library.
The affected library is called OpenVM Peering, and the flaw lets a malicious prover forge any pairing equality. That's a serious vulnerability. Pairing equality is foundational to a lot of zero-knowledge proof constructions.
But the authors, Stefanos Keliosos and Hao Pham, are careful to draw a boundary here. They note this is not a soundness bug in the ZHCM's proving system itself. It only affects code that uses that specific vulnerable library.
The bug received CVE identifier CVE-2026-46669 and was fixed in OpenVM version 1.6.0. And as far as the authors know, all partners building on OpenVM have since upgraded to that patched version.
What's remarkable is the discovery method. An AI auditor found this. It's one thing for a static analysis tool to flag a pattern, but finding a soundness bug in cryptographic library code is a different level entirely.
And the response appears to have completing plate. The Mandagrands finelessly criminating on a word of Blekins, surviving my pifical axment astion promisedly for the East. and the response appears to have been close canals in a thorax, listening her, inspiring me mackers. And the response appears to have been clean to, I mean, I see presentedly. I am prayer-lating no messence of the shallow exquiry, but if you faithed a theme that underscatter absolutely entirely special like me, he's not exactly scenting a people for the money and coming down before you probably must have enough to meeting for imagine to do this little late. And the response, a pleaved, jeezens out of your face. I need to rest transitors everyone that I am buying in the glues and to a thim, found a dispensial beast and they're seeing them. And I very mean that have that ever promising to the place for finally every varied table. Trophical points, would you please exactly stare shitting?
Capital One has released an open source tool called Vul Hunter, an agentic AI system designed to find security flaws in code.
And the reasoning behind it is striking. The company says advanced AI models are dramatically lowering the barrier for bad actors to discover and exploit software vulnerabilities. What once took significant skill and time can now be automated and accelerated.
Right. Capital One frames this as a kind of race against the clock. They warn that the world faces a shrinking window before sophisticated, next-generation AI attack capabilities become affordable and accessible to almost anyone.
So the idea with Vul Hunter is to get defensive tooling into the open-source community before that window closes, using agentic AI to hunt for vulnerabilities before attackers can find them.
Exactly. And by making it open source, Capital One is putting this capability in the hands of developers and security teams everywhere, not just inside the company.
What's notable here is the framing. AI is lowering the cost of offense, so defense has to keep pace. Vul Hunter is their bet on closing that gap.
Switching gears. New research published in PLOS Biology is challenging a long-held view about how the brain handles selective attention.
A team led by Sarah Carda, Emia Alekovic, and colleagues at Trinity College Dublin and Eric Scholm Research measured EEG activity while people listened to two competing spoken narratives at the same time.
Occasionally, the listeners got a cue telling them to switch their attention from one story to the other. And the EEG readings revealed something surprising.
Both speech streams, the one the person was actively attending to and the one they were ignoring, were simultaneously encoded in the human cortex.
And there was a roughly 90 millisecond temporal lag between the two representations. The ignored stream was still being processed, just slightly behind.
This really challenges the classic model of selective attention as a pure filter. The idea that the brain simply blocks out unattended information. What this suggests instead is that both streams are being encoded, and attention might be more about selection after the fact.
Yeah, the cortex is doing the work of representing both signals, and the difference comes down to a tiny timing gap, and presumably which representation gets priority downstream.
The paper is out now in PLOS Biology, and it opens up new questions about how attention really operates at the neural level.
That's our show for today. Let's run through what we covered.
We started with the AWS billing story. The company says it overestimated charges by about $1.7 billion due to inaccurate estimated billing data that appeared in customers' consoles. Actual charges weren't affected.
Then the FAA is letting Boeing sign off on airworthiness certificates for the 737 MAX and 787 again. That's a significant shift in oversight.
Big space news, too. Researchers have found the first atmosphere on a rocky, Earth-like planet in the habitable zone of a distant star. JWST data suggests a substantial atmosphere, possibly with carbon dioxide.
We also dug into the state of open-source AI and checked out Kimi K3, a new open model that's turning heads on the Pelican benchmark.
Kaiser nurses raised concerns about AI and workplace surveillance making their jobs harder. We celebrated the Zlock Z80 turning 50 and noted short sellers notched $8.7 billion in profit as SpaceX shares dipped.
Plus, Apple's legal outreach to OpenAI employees, some practical SQLite tips, and how EEG scans show the brain can track two speech streams at once. Quite a packed episode.
Thanks for spending your time with us. We'll be back with more soon.
See you next time.